5009. Chairman Morgan is sick this morning, and so I will be filling in for her. When I talked to her earlier this morning, I can tell you that she did not sound well at all, so hopefully she'll be feeling better shortly. In case there's overflow for this hearing, we have a room available in room 357. That's up on the third floor, and it will have some video and sound. So anyone who does not have seating space is welcome to go to room 357. We have several people signed up for testimony today. I would ask that those that I call on try to hold your remarks to 3 minutes so that we can be sure and get everyone through. I will be looking at the list and calling on the people that have indicated that they live over 100 miles from Salem, and we'll take care of those folks first, and we'll work our way through it. First, I would like to have Cam, would you like to come up and walk us through your letter here this morning?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Cam Croy Sprawley, the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. You have in front of you what likely will be the last letter of response to questions. I'm going to move quickly through this information, as you do have quite a list of people who would like to testify this morning. But please stop me if you have further questions. The first question is that Senator Gordley had asked for a copy of the consultant's report on the small school base factor and the economies of scale, and that report is attached. It does, as I indicated yesterday, review a number of other models of formulas in other states. That is attachment A. I'm sorry, I wasn't specific about that. It talks about how economies of scale are derived, and then after reviewing different models from across the nation, does propose a recommendation, and we did accept the recommendation as it was put forward. I would be more than happy to go to it in detail, but given the time, I'll go as you desire.
Is that fine? Mr. Chairman, I was just... thank you. Thank you very much for preparing the report. I'll take a look at it later and be in touch with you if I have any other questions, but would like to defer to the public testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates.
I would concur with that. Cam, thanks for all the work you've done on this, and I'll start from look at it. Mr. Chair, as I've looked at this through the last several weeks, I think this is something that cries out for either a task force or a commission to look at this in the interim and really have the time to look at how we are funding via the formula our community colleges. There's obviously a lot of problems here, and I feel this committee doesn't have time to really sit down and probably go through it. I would ask you to consider that for a budget note, that we look at that in the interim and really try to work this out. I understand we have one lawsuit involved already. We don't want more. It's time to sit people down at the table and come up with something we all can live with. Cam, appreciate your work.
I think that's a good recommendation, Representative, and we should convey that to our Chair Morgan.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Cam.
Proceeding, the second question in the response letter was a question that came from Representative Morgan regarding a matrix that would describe the gap as the other element of the community college funding formula. Again, as I said yesterday, as we moved from a formula that was primarily floors and caps and moved to a base factor and a formula where the resources primarily followed the student, we had some what in my vernacular would be large winners and large losers in that process, and therefore we did proceed to implement the funding formula over time. The page one of the response letter does show you how we adjusted so that colleges didn't move from a base or a cap to a new dollar amount in 1 year's time, and instead we spread it over five. And again, I'd be happy to spend more time on that. We do have a chart on page 2 that illustrates the gap adjustment by college since we began the process.
Yes, Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I just want to remind committee members, as we are looking at the Community College Support Fund distribution formula now, that the formula has essentially been suspended for this current biennium, that this formula is not being used, and that the way that the distribution is intended is to be based on the proportion of funds that colleges received in the fall term of last year.
That's right.
So, to that extent, changes in the distribution of students that occur during this biennium will not be reflected in changes in colleges' distribution. So if a college received 10.3%, well, that's pretty high amount, but if they received 4.3% of the total distribution based on how the formula was set up in the fall of last year, they will continue to receive 4.3% of the state distribution in the 03-05 biennium, depending upon whatever level you approve. So the formula is frozen. That's what the state board has done for this biennium that's coming up.
Any questions, comments?
Mm-hmm.
Proceed.
Continuing then to the question that was raised last Thursday by Representative Bates and reiterated yesterday by Chair Morgan, request that we attempt to gather information about the tax burden for households and how that tax burden might be translated to community college specifically. I would say that as you look at the information that's displayed in the attachment, that would be attachment B, that you remember we did pile a number of assumptions. There isn't some caution to assume that the average homeowner is also a community college student. But we did our level best to try to gather the information and use the Department of Revenue information about what the average, in column one, residential property, what the average account was in property tax. Then the second column gives you the community college tax rate per thousand for that county. Figured then a yearly tax burden for the residential property. Aligned that to the tuition of the college that was in that county. The cost of taxes and tuition at 45 credits per that to try to illustrate what a full-time student would be paying. The next column shows per capita income as available from the Department of Revenue. And the last column is a percentage of what it costs the average household, given all that other information, as a percent of their income for 1 year of college.
Questions? I would just point out, I think, that when you're looking at the income of students and compare that with what the per capita personal income shows for the year 2000, probably would not match well at all. And although it is an indicator of the average for that community, it is not an indicator of what the income might be for students attending the community college.
Mr. Chair, we would concur.
Okay, proceed.
Representative March yesterday asked for, on seeing the map that had the by county head count, could we also provide a student full-time equivalent by county, and that is also attached as attachment C. Senator Gordley asked for additional information about the community college partnerships with the university system and independent colleges around student preparation. As I indicated yesterday, there have been some meetings with the university system and independent colleges around teacher preparation, and we have indicated that here. Those are primarily facilitated by the Department of Education as they look at No Child Left Behind changes that would be required of the preparation system. We also wanted to point out that there are a number of community colleges in Oregon that have partnerships with the university system in the preparation of teachers, and those are also listed.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Here, I would just like to stress again that there may be an opportunity to strengthen the relationship with the independent institutions. Again, the independents are producing a majority of teachers, and there may be opportunities to look at strengthening the programs and other efforts. Again, my concern is that they be brought to the table, kept at the table, mm-hmm. and that the meetings be frequent as opposed to which is said here, less frequent.
Thank less you. Frequent, yes. Last week, Representative March asked former Senator Vern Duncan about additional funds for OYCC. We do have some additional information and an attachment. Felt like we had forgotten that question and needed to bring it back. I would point out that there are many statewide efforts that include organizations such as Ducks Unlimited and the AmeriCorps and the Nature Conservancy that do provide leveraged funds in different communities. But several foundations have indicated that they will not move to backfill if general fund is reduced. So it's a yes and, in some cases, no. And last but not least, yesterday Senator Messerly asked a question about the ratio of managers to staff at the department, and I visited with him a little earlier where I was perplexed at the number, and we just wanted to indicate on the record that we do have currently 10 management staff, and we would expect that two of those will likely be reassigned. And that is of some assistance in the manager-to-staff ratio, but does not move the department to a preferred ratio that has been talked about. I mean, that's primarily because we believe we have responsibilities around these different funding cycles or sources that we have, and they require a level of management expertise and supervision. And with that, I believe I am finished.
Okay. Any questions, comments from the committee?
Mr. Chair, just
Senator Gordley.
I'd like to make a suggestion. With the overflow, would it be possible that we use these empty chairs on either side of us to accommodate the citizens?
I think that would be fine. If any of you standing would like to come up and I think these
nice
chairs
try.
These chairs are a lot softer.
Mr. Chair.
Again, we also have room 357 available.
Mr. Yes, Chair, I'd like to point out there's no guilt by association here. Please feel free to step up.
Okay. No other questions, comments? Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
I'd first like to call Vic Preslon. Actually, we have three chairs, so I would like to also call up John Retz and Bob Barber also. Go ahead, Mr. Frezzolo.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Victor Frezzolo, and I'm the president and CEO of Mercy Medical Center in Roseburg, Oregon. Mercy Medical Center employs approximately 1,600 employees, and we are a significant employer of graduates from Umpqua Community College. And that's why I'm here today, because we need a very strongly funded and supported community college in our community. I'm not qualified to talk about all the great things that the college does, but what I am qualified to talk about is their nursing program. And as you all well know, there is a nursing shortage, but I want to talk to you specifically about what's going to happen in the very near future when baby boomers and the crest of that those baby boomers reach the year 2010, when we're thinking about today as a deficiency of nurses. We haven't seen anything until we reach the year 2010, because when people reach the age 65, they geometrically start to use more healthcare resources than any other time in their life. And I want to draw your attention, since we have limited time today, to a report that was done by the United States Department of Health and Human Services that talks about the future of the nursing shortage in the United States, and specifically Oregon. In the year 2005, which is, if you count the way I do, just a year and a half away from where we are today, the national shortage, we will be looking at 149,000 nurses, or we will be short 7% of what we actually need. The state of Oregon will account for a shortage of 2,680 nurses, or 11% short of the identified need. Nationally, for the year 2010, when the baby boomers start to reach age 65, the national shortage for nurses, and I talk about the registered nurse now, 275,000 nurses short, or a need factor of 12%. Oregon will account for 6,200 nurses that will be short, or a need factor of 22%, so we're already exceeding the national average. The year 2015, there'll be a shortage of over 500,000 nurses nationwide, or a need factor of 20. Oregon will account for a shortage of 11,000 nurses, or a need factor of 35%. And the year 2020, which is concludes the study that was done by the federal government, the national shortage will be 800,000 nurses. The need factor will be short 29%. In Oregon, the shortage will be 16,500 nurses. The need factor will be 46%. I want to leave you with a couple of closing thoughts. Number one is 60% of the nurses that we have employed at Mercy Medical Center, and we have approximately 600 nurses employed, 60% are graduates from UCC. I also want to leave you with this thought, that all the nurses that are graduating every year in the United States, 60% come from community colleges, 60%. That's twice as much as the baccalaureate degree nurses. And finally, I want to leave you with one last thought in reference to UCC. They have the capability of accepting 68 students for this coming year. They had 208 applicants. 208 applicants. These are people that if we had positions for them in a community college, they would be guaranteed a job literally for the rest of their professional careers. Better than IT, better than technology, better than timber industry, better than any industry in the United States, because healthcare, the need for healthcare, is not affected by market and economic fluctuations. And thank you for listening to me. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. We've heard from OHSU as well as other community colleges the need for nursing programs in the state. So thank you very much. Mr. Rett.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you very much for your time. My name is John Retz, and I'm a board member at COCC. And as such, I'm elected by my local community, as you are, to represent my community, and it's my responsibility to learn about, to understand, and to make important decisions about critical issues affecting this vital social institution serving our community. One of the really important guiding factors influencing all the decisions about the college is the set of goals or outcomes we've set for the college, the top priority of which is, because of COCC, the citizens of our region will have access to family wage jobs. A good point my colleague has just made. What's happening to the community colleges right now is significantly jeopardizing that goal. COCC is in very strong support of funding community colleges. They are underfunded, and the formula is broken. The insertion and imposition by the State Board of, quotes, equalization across colleges as a value, I think is inappropriate and is having some serious unintended consequences. As one elected representative official to another, I want to tell you that you have the responsibility and the authority to repair this broken situation. The broken condition is exacerbated by the inclusion of property taxes in the funding formula. Taking local taxes from some colleges and distributing them unequally to others magnifies both the inequities of the current formula and is a threat to quality, local control, and accountability to our regional constituents. The State Board, in my opinion, does not have the authority to include property taxes in the formula. The legislature has the authority and the responsibility. The State Board is authorized to distribute state funds. Local property taxes are a local resource. Local control is at the heart of the Oregon Community College system. Community colleges are founded only by local action. College governing boards are locally elected. Local determination of programs to meet local community needs is a hallmark of what the community college system has been about in Oregon since its inception and what has given it such a wonderful track record. Local boards are charged with bringing together the resources necessary to meet local needs, and local property taxes are locally authorized. State action to include local taxes and state funding mechanisms eviscerates local boards' ability to gather the resources. In other words, it interferes with our ability to do our job. The formula and the underlying assumptions it makes are a threat to quality of education. The formula drives all community colleges to the average. It's a socialistic policy promoting mediocrity. I don't think that's what was intended, but that is an unintended consequence. And it serves as a disincentive to both do and be the best, undermining quality. It infringes on the community college's ability to be flexible, and it discourages local investment in community colleges. We've got a case in our region right now where a local community is having a great deal of trouble marshaling any enthusiasm to find local additional funding to keep its centers open because they feel so betrayed by the fact that the property taxes that they voted in the past are leaving the region for other parts of the state. So it flies in the face of the statutes endorsing local control of community colleges. The formula, and including property taxes in the formula, produces a trust, credibility, and accountability problem for me as a board member, and I think it spills over to you, unfortunately. When we as a board hold public testimony, just as you do, our constituents are very troubled that their property taxes, voted on by them as support for their specific local institution, are not being used at their local institution. They are outraged that their local taxes are going to institutions which have higher employment rates, better homes, lower self-assessed taxes on those homes, and where there is greater accessibility to community college resources than they enjoy. It's difficult. It's difficult to sit and look them in the eye and answer the questions. And they understand clearly that it is a technical sleight of hand to say all property taxes are local, when in fact the formula is offsetting state funds with their local property taxes to benefit these other communities. Our constituents get the breach of trust very clearly, and I hear about it regularly. So shifting access from one college to another is indeed a zero-sum game. There's no increase in overall access. We pay for their greater access by a loss in ours. something about inequitable distribution of state funds in the name of equity does not ring true, and you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand that. They understand, my constituents do, that their local board cannot actually respond to our local program needs because large amounts of local assets are exported to other communities. This issue needs to be and can be resolved now. Redistribution has been occurring since 1996. COCC has exported over $10 million, and annually nearly 10% of our general fund goes out and doesn't come back. Resolving this issue has been repeatedly deflected by task forces, by committees, and by councils, and they have produced no change. I personally appeared before the state board in November of 2002 to again raise this matter, and the most recent petition to the state board was denied again on Friday, April 18th, 2003. It's last week. This is a legislative responsibility, not a decision to be left to the State Board of Education. The legislature has authorized the State Board to distribute state funds, not local funds, and not to make local program decisions. Opponents of change claim it is complicated. It is not. The statutes are clear. Community colleges are local colleges. The subcommittee must act to resolve the issue, prohibit the state board from shifting resources through the inclusion of property taxes in the formula. Exclude property taxes from the formula. It is that simple. Then you can set up a committee or a task force or whatever you deem appropriate to study the fundamental intent of the formula regarding local control and whether equalization is an appropriate goal in the case of community colleges. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Dr. Barber, would you like to proceed?
Senator Messley, Chair, and members of the committee. My board member, John Retz, has done a comprehensive job, so I'll keep my comments very short. First of all, I'd like to thank the committee for beginning a thorough discussion of the formula. As you know, we've been very concerned. I think your questions with regard to regional unemployment rates, income capacity, property tax assessments, district characteristics, and other aspects are extremely important because it gets us looking beyond the simple basic FTE charts and gets us to the real core issues. For example, in COCC, we've lost $1.8 million per year from our district, yet five of our six counties that we serve have unemployment rates over 10%. Two of our counties, Crook and Jefferson County, have average per capita incomes in the bottom seven counties at $20,000 and $17,000, respectfully. COCC is and has been the largest geographic district, and we serve communities that are an hour and a half to 2 hours away that pay property taxes to us that have been served by centers that no longer really can be funded because of the construct of the formula. These are policy issues that I think it's extremely important that the committee pursue. I think the current revenue problems are masking the legal and system problems of using property taxes as a factor. I think even the discussions about professional technical programs not being able to deal with their costs is a good example. The statute does say that the formula should take in consideration the higher costs of professional technical programs, and in fact it does not. In fact, on an hour-by-hour basis, we're paid the same for professional technical programs as we are for other programs. If that was adjusted, the professional technical programs could stand on their own, and we wouldn't be trying to adjust or be flexible about self-improvement courses to underwrite the costs of professional technical programs. Some say the legislature shouldn't be involved in looking at how the state board distributes the legislative allocation for community colleges. There are concerns that the flaws of the allocation formula will be exposed to legislative review. I disagree. I think the legislature can look at the formula from a policy perspective. The current formula is not a compromise. The current formula historically has been a simple vote by the majority of colleges who benefit from factoring in the property tax into the formula. The current formula has been suspended, as been noted, but it's suspended and still uses property taxes as a factor. The State Board does not have the authority to use our taxes to benefit other colleges, and that's where we are pursuing a lawsuit to stop the practice. We support the legislature's further review of the policy issues and hope it will mitigate the need for continued litigation. We also believe there are solutions that can be implemented, and it's not just about taking the money from the winners and returning it to the losers. One might do this out of pure fairness, but the winners of our past losses could be held harmless by changing how the state allocates the current distribution. To date, we've not been able to get the State Board to take a serious look at the alternative solutions, and we would ask that you consider them. We welcome your review and your leadership in exploring these issues and your participation in correcting the property tax and other funding formula allocation problems. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next, I'd like to call Dan Smith and Chris Chandler. And is there another person died for us?
Chris Chandler before.
Okay. Is there one person? Yes. Go ahead, Dan.
Mr. Chair, thank you for courtesy of listening to me today. I'll be brief. I'm Dan Smith. I'm President and CEO of Bay Area Hospital in Coos Bay, Oregon. Also proud to say that I'm a 9-year board member of Southwestern Oregon Community College in Coos Bay. I won't reiterate what my colleague, Mr. Frislon, did such an outstanding job of describing to you about the nursing shortage. A couple of things that I would like to say in addition to his comments. First of all, the nursing shortage is critical, and as he pointed out, is going to be critical for all of us as we age, and it's only going to be exacerbated by the fact of what I call the demographic, and that is the fact that we're all of us baby boomers are going to tax our healthcare system to an incredible amount. I suspect we don't even imagine how taxed we're going to be. But I would also submit that there are other healthcare careers that are impacted by community colleges as well. A couple of examples. Bay Area Hospital has, for the last several years, had real issues trying to recruit radiologic technology medical imaging graduates. Southwestern Oregon Community College has an articulation agreement with several institutions of higher education throughout the state, and we have students who take their first 2 years, earn their transfer degree, and then go on to OIT and some other institutions throughout the state. We currently offer scholarship to employees who want to do that. So that that speaks well to our community college. Community colleges, as I recall, many years ago, and apparently Southwestern is the arguably the oldest community college in Oregon. I say arguably because I've heard it argued. People more knowledgeable about that than myself. But my point is that community colleges were established to allow students who perhaps didn't want to go on to earn a baccalaureate degree or advanced degrees the opportunity to get some specialized training. But also, I believe they were established to allow students to go a year or two to a community college, learn how to be good college students, and then go on to institutions of higher learning, and I think that's a very important part of our mission. Anyway, to give you an example, also we have ongoing problems recruiting pharmacy people, not only pharmacists, but pharmacy technicians. And community colleges, again, Southwestern has an articulation agreement with Oregon State University, and we have a number of students who go from Southwestern on to OSU. So when you're thinking about shortages in healthcare workers, think not only, please, of nurses, but also some of the other clinical specialties. The other point I wanted to make is that Southwestern Oregon Community College, to give you a perspective similar to Mr. Frislon's, we have 350 approximately registered nurses that work at Bay Area Hospital. Bay Area Hospital is a 125-bed facility. It's the largest hospital on the Oregon coast. Of those 350 nurses, almost 70% are graduates of Southwestern. So that is a critical, absolutely critical resource for us. We also have a problem within our current cadre of registered nurses goes back to the demographic I mentioned. The average age of our nurses at Bay Area Hospital is 49 years old. So if you put that in perspective, a good number of those ladies and gentlemen are already planning their retirement. So again, that's just going to exacerbate the issues that are coming on as far as increased demand for healthcare services. Other than that, I really think Mr. Freslone did an excellent job of telling you about some of the issues that we have, and also my colleagues from the other community colleges about some of the perspective that I have as a fellow board member. I also am not a believer in the funding formula, and hopefully you can make some improvements on that as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Chris?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. I'm Chris Chandler de Torres. I'm a certified economic developer and the executive director of the Central Coast Economic Development Alliance. As we are all painfully aware, state government is in financial crisis. Dreadful cuts are being made at all levels of the state's budget. The solution? Well, one solution might be encouraging all Oregonians to play state lottery games much more often than they do currently. That probably isn't very realistic. The second and better strategy is to put Oregonians back to work, generating income tax that will, in turn, support state government. Economic development professionals are on the front lines fighting unemployment in Oregon, and fighting right with us are the state's community colleges. Community colleges are vital when folks who have been laid off need a computer class to make themselves more marketable, when a semester's worth of classes or 6 months of training might help people get back to work or help them get a better paying job or one for which there is more demand. Investment in our community colleges more than pays for itself. According to a recent study performed exactly 1 year ago by an Idaho economics firm, community colleges provide substantial return on investment. In addition to the crucial job training resulting in increased income tax revenue for the state, which I have just outlined, on average, for every community college credit completed, a student will earn $87 more per year every year he or she is in the workforce. Just how much am I talking about? For someone that earns a two-year degree from an Oregon community college, that totals nearly $8,000 a year, or more than $250,000 for someone who works 40 years after earning a two-year degree. In addition to financial benefits to the trained worker and to the state, people who take classes from an Oregon community college are less likely to smoke, abuse alcohol, depend on welfare, need unemployment benefits, or commit crimes. In our small county on the Oregon, on the Central Coast, Lincoln County, our community college saves taxpayers more than $400,000 a year due to reductions in these areas. Community colleges are the best investment the state can make that will rapidly result in increased income tax revenue. This is not the time to be further cutting community college budgets. I realize that the budget reduction pain must be shared by all state-funded entities, but I think the community colleges have taken more than a severe hit. This is a terrible time for community colleges to be forced to make cuts in class offerings, to raise tuition, which the unemployed can hardly afford, if at all. Before the state's budget began this frightening slide, my agency hosted an economic development conference in which more than 110 leaders attended from across Lincoln County. The purpose of the event was to prioritize for this session of the legislature. The top economic development priority for our county, selected by vote, was a permanent campus for Oregon Coast Community College. I will submit copies of the top 10 list which resulted from that conference. And I'll close with a crucial piece of information. When the Dell Computer Company was considering more than 10 sites in the West for an inbound call center last fall, they visited Roseburg. Competition was very tough, but Dell chose Roseburg, has hired 300 people there, and is looking for 100 more workers to earn good wages with benefits. What made the difference to Dell? A key factor was Umpqua Community College. The folks from Dell were very impressed by the college's commitment to computer training for citizens of every age, from teens to senior citizens. If we are going to successfully recruit jobs, successfully train workers to fill them, turn our economy around, and fund state government properly again, community college support will be crucial. Please replace the majority of the funding currently slated to be taken from community colleges in the coming biennium and invest in the state's economic recovery. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for traveling to Salem. Next, I'd like to call Gretchen Chute, David Duncan, and Felipe Sandoval, if I'm saying that right. Maybe not.
Good Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Gretchen Schutte, president of Chemeketa Community College. On behalf of Oregon's community colleges, I'd like to add to the public testimony today an expression of appreciation for the quality of this committee's hearings on Oregon's community colleges. We've really appreciated your questions and your comments and our opportunity to engage with you in these difficult times. I also want to assure you that if you have additional questions, that we stand ready to assist you as you continue with the public policy questions facing Oregon. You've heard about the funding formula, about which, yes, there's much disagreement, but the key issue facing Oregon's community colleges is having enough resources to really meet our community's needs. We know with you that resources are scarce, but again, speaking for the presidents and local boards, we want to acknowledge the recognition that community colleges find in the co-chair's budget, the co-chair's priority to partially restore cuts for community colleges and to partially restore resources for the Oregon Opportunity Grants. It's, of course, hard to see it as enough because we, too, believe that access to Oregon's community colleges and to the education and training we provide can really assist individuals in our communities and certainly assist Oregon's recovery. The students who testified yesterday and over the last few days and those you see today as well as those you saw in the Chemeketa video yesterday are what it's all about. They are what keep us coming to work with energy and purpose every day. Certainly the particular lives in the video that you saw yesterday have a particular community college in their stories, but I need to confess to you that that video was not created especially for you and for these hearings. I really needed those faces and those particular words to find a way to convey a thank you to the people who work so hard at Chemeketa Community College. But also, I needed their faces and their words to truly convey to the particular communities in Marion Polk and Yamhill County the magic that goes on at Chemeketa Community College and also the very hard work that goes on at that particular college. But magic is going on across the state and hard work by students and staff. And we really just wanted to thank you for your attention to these success stories and also for doing what you can to keep as many doors as possible open to as many people across the state. So I will stop my comments there and just again convey to you that we're here, we're ready to help with your continued work and with our communities.
Thank you. Hello, Mr. Chairman, honorable legislators. My name is David Duncan. I'm a second-year electronics technician student at Chemeketa Community College, and I've been invited to tell my story here today. I put a face on a particular community college constituency of which you might not be aware, and that is the constituency of older workers who have been displaced by economic change. Now, I'm sure that you're familiar with the changes that have occurred in Oregon's economy in the recent years, but I'll briefly touch upon them to provide a context for my individual story. Oregon has had two traditional cornerstones economically, timber and agriculture. Forest products, of course, declined dramatically in the 80s and into the early 90s. In the later 90s, agriculture also experienced a dramatic decline, with particularly NAFTA and a very strong U.S. dollar in the late 90s, which made export goods much more expensive in foreign markets. Now, the impacts of those decreases in our foundational economic areas was covered in large part by the tech tide, tech and moved into Oregon, and covered up many of the adverse effects that otherwise the state would have experienced. We had a boom time in the 90s. Now, my personal story, I worked on an Oregon Century farm. I managed a fabrication shop. Now, in the course of our own enterprise, we found that we could best meet certain needs by building equipment ourselves. What we found over time is that our fellow growers here in Oregon would also buy that equipment from us. So we developed a business making new equipment, some of it of a proprietary design. Then we made parts that serviced the infrastructure base of our particular industry. And then we provided service and installation of that equipment. And it was quite a good deal. But in the late 90s, a sea change came. There was very little new equipment ordered for expansion. I noticed that most of our workloads seemed to be coming out of insurance settlements when one of our fellow growers had a problem. At the high point, I supervised 6 people. We worked full-time in a dedicated 5,000-square-foot shop. We had all the work we could handle. But with the decline in agriculture, by 2001, I had no staff. I was part-time, and our business consisted mainly of replacement parts orders. So I had to do something different. So I went to Shemakata as an opportunity to get new skills and to stay viable within the Oregon economy. So I come before you as an individual, but I do want to emphasize that I represent a larger constituency. Right now I'm missing a class, thank you very much. And I would say that the average age of the students in that class is 35, and they're all folks like me that are seeking new careers because their old careers really are not viable in our current state economy. So for me, Shemakata is a means of adaptation, and I think on a larger view, the community college system is a means of preserving the value of human capital in this state. So in recognition of that, I urge you to preserve or even increase funding for the community college system. Thank you for listening to my story, and I do hope you vote to maintain our Oregon capital, human capital. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Senator, Chair and Committee, my name is Felipe Sandoval. I'm just here to speak about my personal experience through Shemakata Community College as a student. I work for 22 years for Big Sweet Company, which was my last day of work was November 17 of 2001. Then we joined Shemakata Community College to face a new world, you know. Being dislocated is a feeling that no one wants to go through. We were afraid, we didn't know what to do. It was like 350 people out of that company. So we soon began, you know, facing the situation of the language barrier. So we enrolled into ESL classes, find out that we all had to either earn GEDs, learn new skills to be employable. So right now, I'm one test away to accomplish my GED. I'm currently assisting a computer class at Waldo Middle School, and my goal is to become a job developer in the future. Thanks to Shemakata Community College, I can see it happen someday. I'd like to thank the college for the opportunities, the program that is there available for people like me. I see so many wonderful people in there open their hearts to the community in a situation like we went through. So I'd like to emphasize that these programs are really important to our community and just, you know, do whatever it takes to keep them possible, because I really don't know what we would have done if this possibility won't be available for us. So I just like to thank you very much and just keep in mind that this is really important for our community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you for bringing us the message. I wish you well. Love you. Next, I'd like to call Gregory Dinkin, I believe that's what it is, Carrie Wong, and Tom Fahey. And we're doing quite well, but let me remind everyone that I do urge you to try to hold your comments to 3 minutes because it is going to be tight whether we get everyone's ability to opportunity to testify before our time is up at 10:30. Go ahead.
Chair Messerly, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Gregory Duncan. I'm the student body president of Wayne Community College and a board member for the Oregon Student Association. For the past 28 years, OSA has advocated for access and affordability to high-quality post-secondary education. And perhaps the first time in those 28 years, both access and quality of our institutions are being severely threatened. We understand the difficulties that you are facing in putting together a workable state budget with a grim economic outlook. But we are here today to stress the importance of recognizing education as the best method to economic recovery and reversing the trend of dwindling state revenues. It is essential that we prioritize increasing our workforce and rebuilding the income of our population upon which our state government is almost entirely independent. At a time of high unemployment and decreasing access to Oregon's universities, more and more Oregonians are seeking post-secondary education at community colleges. Unfortunately, the lack of funding is limiting the amount of students that community colleges can serve and reducing the number of people that can afford to enroll. As some members of this committee have said, we're making education unaffordable for low-income folks. In addition, community colleges do not have adequate funding to serve the current population, therefore slowing students' ability to receive education and training in order to re-enter or enter the job market. Between 2001 and 2004, myself and other students at Wayne Community College will experience a 67% tuition increase. Lane ranks as one of the most expensive community colleges in the West. And just as we are paying more for the availability of classes is diminishing. I've seen the elimination and the reduction of over 15 programs at my institution within the last 2 years. Classes are filling up more quickly, and we are being forced to pay more or less as tuition skyrockets. Without additional revenue, the budget picture has left you to decide whether it's best to cap enrollment or price the most needy students out of an education. Both options carry serious long-term consequences. OSA asks you today to make access a priority. We also urge legislators to consider any revenue options so that we may explore a full range of possibilities to minimize the immediate and long-term effects that the recession will cause. Please support adequate funding for community colleges and stop forcing them to look at students as the only means for additional dollars. Help our community colleges provide quality education at an affordable rate for all Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you. I do want to clarify your written testimony.
Yes.
Is 41%.
Yeah, there is a discrepancy with the math. It is actually 67%. It went from $38 to $62.
Okay, so the committee would
correct. 60 what?
67.
It's a 67% increase.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony and the thoughtfulness in your remarks. And to your statements and concern about revenue and the need for increased revenue, this is an FYI. There will be in the House Revenue Committee a couple of sales tax measures, House Bill 3500, House Bill 3608. 3608 would dedicate revenues to pre-kindergarten through community colleges. So I would ask that you, as a student leader, start rallying the troops to bring testimony forward. And again, it's an opportunity we have here not to go down the path of further diminishing opportunities for students in our state.
Good to hear.
Ms. Wong?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Carrie Wong. I own a business called Practical Gourmet, and I will be very brief. In January of 2002, I, too, was a displaced older worker and was afforded an opportunity through the Economic Development Program to start my own business. It was very much a fast track. Within a few months, it was not only up and running, it was generating income. And I really accredit this to the Economic Development Program through the Small Business Development Center. A lot of the information I gained from attending those programs and classes enabled me to open this business. In the course of just a little over a year, I have just made an offer to purchase 7,000 square feet for expansion. In the first year of business, I paid back all my startup costs. I turned a profit in my first year, and it's continuing to grow. By September of this year, I will be hiring an additional 3 to 5 employees to match the expansion of my company. The one thing I really need to stress is the staff at the Small Business Development Center has been there every step of the way, even after the classes were over. If I needed information, input, or insight, they were always available to help me achieve the goals for my company. I think that these fast-track type programs are a way to augment perhaps, you know, the more long-term education, especially for the older worker, and I really don't like saying that. But it really does bring money into the economy, I think, a lot quicker. And I think it's there and it's available for everyone that wishes to take advantage of it. And I think that's something that's critical that we keep. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sir?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for listening this morning. My name is Tom Fahey. I'm the Director of Human Resources of Ockert's Siltronic Corporation in Portland. Our company is a manufacturer of silicon wafers. I'm also the President-elect of the Portland Community College Foundation Board of Trustees. Thank you for this opportunity to let me tell you about my company's relationship with PCC and how the vital services of the community college are to our business. My company, Wacker Siltronic, is a German-based company whose U.S. headquarters is here in Portland. We currently employ 1,300 family wage jobs. The company was looking for a U.S. base in 1978 and visited many cities for our potential home in the U.S. We selected Portland for several reasons, but key among them was the quality of public school system and the capacity for workforce training provided by PCC. Wacker, the City of Portland, and PCC entered into what was at the time a very unique partnership in the late 1970s. Wacker supplied PCC with equipment for a training lab at PCC's Southeast Center. Wacker paid for the PCC college instructors to go to Germany to learn the silicon wafer manufacturing process. And then curriculum materials were developed and translated. The college provided training at the Southeast Center, culminating with 8 weeks of training at the Wacker plant. The first 460 production jobs filled by Wacker were all trained by PCC. And I'm proud to say I was one of those 460. And the partnership between PCC and Wacker has continued for the past 25 years. PCC has given our entire community an economic boost by helping prepare a well-informed, skilled workforce. PCC has been there to assist Wacker in training new employees during expansions in 1989 and 1996. And when our industry has demanded changes in our skill sets. I think you've heard today already about people going back for retraining and how really that is quite common, these changing skill sets. As our business evolves, we constantly have turned to PCC as our first source partner for first-rate instruction and training. We spent over $100,000 in year 2001 and over $70,000 last year for customized workforce training through PCC despite the severe economic downturn. PCC serves as the number one vehicle for our employees to use to improve their education by pursuing degrees which advance their careers through promotions. And I think this is a key point because we do require certain coursework and certain degrees in some cases for people to achieve promotions within the company. and many employees are there for their career, hopefully, with our company. There are certain classes now because of limitations that PCC has where enrollment fills up with in less than 10 minutes of the opening of sign up for those courses online. So this is severely restricting the ability of people to get the coursework that they need. Our company supports all of this education through our tuition assistance benefit to the tune of over $100,000 for PCC last year alone. And our employees who are taking 100 and 200 level college courses are required to do so at the community college level. Because we know the quality is the same than at a four-year institution. And this is a key point. These employees are required to go there for their 102 level, 200 level courses. So VOCR understands the value of PCC to the community. It offers opportunities for thousands of residents annually who turn to PCC not only for college education, but also for job skills training. Many of these residents have nowhere else to turn. Do you realize that the annual enrollment for PCC is larger than the Oregon University system combined, all campuses? We at VOCR certainly understand budget constraints. We have had our share of budget challenges in recent months, like many other industries. We urge you, however, to support our public education system to the greatest extent possible. Our K-16 public education system is key to our ability to recover from this economic downturn and to build a vital future. Also, I'd like to point out, as reported in today's Oregonian, upcoming tuition increases at PCC will be, for the summer term, going up 27%. So, unfortunately, the colleges aren't waiting. They're having to go ahead and do these tuition increases, as you've heard this morning from others, for the people who can least afford to pay this. So please, we urge your support of increased funding. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to call Rob Wagner, Michael Dembro, and Dick Strather.
Good morning, Chair Meserle, members of the Education Subcommittee. For the record, my name is Rob Wagner. I'm the Director of Government Relations with the American Federation of Teachers, Oregon. Today here representing faculty and or classified employees in several community colleges across the state, including Portland Community College, Lane CC, Columbia Gorge, Oregon Coast, and Southwestern Oregon Community College. I'd like to make a couple very brief comments and then introduce Michael Dembro, the president of the PCC Faculty Federation, who has over 20 years of experience teaching at Portland Community College, to offer his experience on the current fiscal state of community colleges. I'd also like to briefly acknowledge Lucia Barnett, who's the president of the PCC Federation of Classified Employees, who's sitting out here, who's here today in solidarity for additional funding for community colleges. And I'd also like to say to Brian Ruzica and the students at PCC that they look good sitting up at the dais, and maybe we can get them name placards. just really briefly, AFT Oregon and members and the other faculty and classified members working in community colleges around the state are the folks that make community colleges work. Looking at the budget numbers released last week, either at $397 million or $417 million, they're far insufficient to ever get close to meeting the need for community colleges right now. We've heard the rhetoric recently about government living within its means, but I'd like to offer just two very brief observations. First, community colleges differ than the private sector model. When the economy dips and people reduce consumption of some goods, the consumption of community college services actually spikes. And the second point is that community colleges offer value-added services. I think you've heard this in testimony prior to mine. But investment in community colleges are truly an investment in Oregon's economic recovery. And I'd just like to say as well that the linchpin are the faculty and the classified staff who make community colleges work and provide for the educational opportunity and experience for Oregonians across the state. I would just encourage you to invest in community colleges in order to recruit and retain quality employees to vital public sector work. One final word before I turn it over to Michael is just to say, in terms of revenue and Senator Gourley's response as well, I know that this is a Ways and Means Committee, it's not the Revenue Committee, but we do believe that the revenue is the second side of the coin. And in your capacity as legislators or within your caucuses, we just encourage you to push the revenue solution this legislative session. With that, I'll turn it over to Michael. Thank you.
Senator Messerly, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address you today. As Rob said, my name is Michael Dembro, and I'm president of the Portland Community College Faculty Federation, whose members are the college's nearly 2,000 full-time and part-time faculty and academic professionals. I'm also an officer, treasurer of AFT Oregon, which represents the faculty and classified staff at the state's largest institution, that is PCC, but also at some of its smallest and most rural, such as Oregon Coast at Newport, Southwestern at Coos Bay, and Columbia Gorge in the Dalles. But the reason I'm here to talk to you today is really because of my day job. Actually, my night job. I'm teaching till 10 tonight. I teach English at Portland Community College's Cascade campus and have done so since 1982. Cascade is the smallest of PCC's three main campuses, located in inner north, northeast Portland. We're the most ethnically diverse campus in the state, and our students include the college's most economically disadvantaged. I can tell you from personal experience that there are thousands of Oregonians out there whose lives have been transformed by the work that we do there, who've been brought into the economic mainstream thanks to their experience with us. Many thousands more are waiting to join them. It is with that as my context that I bring you this report from the front lines as a faculty. As you know, PCC was forced to respond to the special session cuts by cutting sections. And I can tell you from ground zero what that's meant. Winter term, when the section cuts first hit, students were in a panic. In my department alone, scores of students struggled to get into closed classes, begging us to open additional sections. We could not. Most of us let in more students than we should have, beyond our limits, but we could only do so much. So many of them simply went away. Many of them are not back this term either, in part because our sections continue to be reduced, and in part because when they missed their chance to take the second term in a sequence, they lost the chance for a full year. That's one of the challenges of teaching at a small campus, as many in this room know. The options are limited to begin with, and once students slip off the train, it's harder to get back on. Also, our students lead very complicated lives. Nearly all of them work, many full-time, have families, and lots of responsibilities. When their course scheduling options become so limited, their educational and job readiness options become limited too. The dream is deferred, and who knows for how long. This is the result of the cuts imposed on us by the last legislature, together with the pressures created by this poor economy producing more students in need of our services. I don't need to tell you that the proposed budgets, certainly the governor's but also the co-chairs, are substantially lower than even that for community colleges. We're being forced to cut more, non-renew scores of part-time and full-time faculty, and raise tuition by my calculation, more than 28% in 1 year alone. If community colleges are all about access, this funding situation is all about its denial. And the problem is not only one of access, it's also one of quality, both short-term and long-term. You heard last week from the college presidents the fear that this funding crisis will lead the colleges to move away from professional technical classes in favor of transfer, simply to make ends meet, and thereby harm the mission, and not to mention the communities of these colleges. One of the reasons for that is that the professional technical classes need to be smaller and more hands-on. But another reason is that transfer classes are much more likely to be staffed by part-time instructors. This may seem counterintuitive to you, because you might think that part-time community college faculty would be working professionals who come in to teach in areas of their expertise. In fact, the great bulk of adjunct faculty in the community colleges are teaching in the basic skills and transfer areas. These people are working full-time, but they're working full-time teaching, but their low-paid work is spread out over several colleges. They are part-time not by choice, but because this is cheaper for the institution. At my own college and others around the state, we have for that reason seen an increasing reliance on part-time instructors to teach the institution's core classes. At PCC last fall, fewer than half of our sections were taught by full-time faculty, the result of a steady decrease since the funding problems and enrollment increases of the 90s began. With even less money now, the fear is that more and more vacancies will be filled by offering sections taught by lower-paid part-time instructors. Matters of exploitation aside, this decline in the full-time faculty has been bad for the colleges and the quality of the work that we can do. Don't get me wrong, part-time instructors are generally excellent teachers, but their time on campus is limited, and our students need them on campus, and they simply cannot be there for students the way that full-timers can. The overuse of them means more and more of a burden placed on a declining number of full-timers who must do all the advising, curriculum development, and committee work for their subject areas, on top of their already high course loads and course preparation requirements. This decline must stop. Believe me, we can only do so much, and we already do so much. Community colleges are the great success story of the American educational experience and of the American public sector. We certainly see that in Oregon, and it's thanks to the many individuals, faculty, classified, staff, and student alike, who are willing to put in the hours, committed to pursuing this dream. We work very, very hard. Senator Messerly and committee members, I've given you a handout telling you about one of my classes at PCC. There's nothing special about it. It just happens to be a class I'm teaching right now. We've just started week number 4. It's the third week in the three-term English comp sequence, and it's a course that works extensively and intensively on research writing. Students leave this course proficient in the skills needed to be successful in our information age, but they learn much, much more than that. My little handout gives you some facts about the students in this class, the students who are being so well served by our community colleges, whose futures would be very, very different if it weren't for us. When you think of students like these and of the others who will follow them if access to higher ed is restored as a core value of this state, then you can see why adequate funding for community colleges must be a core priority of this budget. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Sir?
Chair Messerly and members of the committee, my name is Dick Strathern, Director of Human Resources for PCC Structurals, Inc., a division of Precision Cast Parts, the other PCC, in Portland, Oregon. September 11th was a wake-up call to everyone in America. It alerted us to the dangers of terrorism that had been building for years without our paying attention. Events in Oregon are now issuing a wake-up call to another crisis that has been building beyond notice, a work crisis. This crisis is hidden and building, but its impact may be greater and longer lasting. The economic challenge is worse than it appears. It is more serious than the dot-com collapse and deceptive financial reporting. There are three major gaps threatening to reduce significantly our current standard of living, namely the worker gap, where we have relied for the past 20 years on the dramatic growth of a native-born workforce to find an ever-expanding supply of new workers. That growth is now over. The skill gap, for the last two decades, our productivity has been boosted by a technology and a better educated workforce to take advantage of it. But just as our needs for an educated workforce accelerate, the gains in education are slowing down because of inadequate funding for this critical priority. The wage gap. The gap in earnings between workers at the bottom and those at the top has widened and looks to expand even further. Ignored, these three gaps are threatening our productivity and growth, our competitiveness on the state, local, and international levels, and potentially even our cohesiveness as a nation. Labor and skill shortages hurt industry and increase the wage gap. An inadequate, ill-equipped workforce that leads wages to stagnate and make businesses less competitive. If immigrants increasingly occupy the lowest tier of work, they will become an increasingly isolated segment of our society. Consequently, firms will increasingly locate abroad to find those skilled and even unskilled workers that they need to compete effectively with in the global marketplace. Clackamas Community College has supported PCC's structural division over the past several decades in meeting the above crisis. Three examples stand out. The design of a two-year associate degree to meet the technological needs of our workforce. Significant assistance in developing curriculum and instructor training for a very successful English as a Second Language program taught at the work site to meet our immigrant worker basic education needs. And three, a broad spectrum of course offerings for upgrading employee skill sets for advancement up the PCC career ladder, supported by the company college reimbursement program. Some time ago, we surveyed our total employees based here in Portland, Oregon, and discovered two telling insights. Our employees stated that Precision was a great place to work for because of opportunities to get ahead. This measure was 10% above the national norm. Secondly, 901 employees, 50% of our total employee population, identified themselves educationally as having taken post-secondary college courses, which we later discovered was through attendance at community colleges, predominantly Clackamas Community College. We are convinced that these findings demonstrate the key cause and effect relationship between education, skill development, and job advancement opportunities. The community college model best serves industry better than any other workforce or economic development model in closing the labor, skill, and wage gap. How fortunate we are that the founders of our community college system championed the Jeffersonian idea that the most important role of education in a democracy is the creation of citizens who are productive and responsible, capable of earning a living, making informed decisions, and stepping into leadership. Without the necessary funding, many of these programs will fall by the wayside and increase the ever-widening gaps of labor, skill, and living wage. Ignoring these gaps could put us in a situation of no-win economic stagnation as our communities grow apart. Please do whatever you can to reduce funding cuts that impact worker education and development. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Next, I'd like to call Veronica Erkbon, Brian Ruska, and Melanie Duvall.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Melanie Duvall, and I am the Director of State and Federal Affairs for the Associated Students at Mount Hood Community College. Mount Hood Community College changed my life, and because of all I have gained while attending, my experience will impact the lives of my family for years to come. I am a first-generation college graduate. I will be. So it's going to change the lives of my children. 13 years ago, I was a high school dropout who had no future and a turbulent past. It wasn't until I was married with two children that my future became important. But how could I possibly attend college after being out of school so long? My chances at that point of obtaining a bachelor's degree were non-existent since I had only a GED and no positive academic record. Mammoth Community College was in my neighborhood and affordable. Attending MHCC allowed me to prove myself as a serious student and build my confidence. With small class sizes and individual attention from my instructors, I gained positive self-confidence along with a great education. Thanks to my experience at Mount Hood, I am looking forward to a better future. I am an Oregon Outstanding Student Scholar this year, a member of Phi Theta Kappa, Director of State and Federal Affairs for the Associated Student Government, and I will be transferring to Willamette University as an International Studies Political Science major fall of 2003. None of this would have been possible without having been able to attend Mount Hood Community College. Community colleges are vital to the recovery and stability of Oregon's economy. By providing quality education within their communities at a reasonable cost, many people are able to gain the knowledge and skills needed to earn a living wage. With one of the highest unemployment rates in the nation, now more than ever, Oregon needs to provide financial support to the institutions that will get Oregonians back to work. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you. Whoever's next, take your pick.
Chairman Messerly, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to come here today. My name is Brian Rizika. I'm a student at Cascade Campus of Portland Community College. And I could give you a number of reasons why it's so important to fund community colleges, and I'm sure you've been hearing those reasons for some time now from a lot of different people. So instead, I'll share with you my situation briefly, and I'll leave you with that. I'm 29 years old. I don't really look back on my high school experience with a lot of pride. In fact, college wasn't really an option for me. When I got out of high school, I think my GPA was around a 1.5 or somewhere in there. I failed a lot of classes, a lot of D's. I wasn't real happy at that period of my life. I ended up painting houses and working for various painting companies for about 9 years out of high school. And I didn't really know where my life was going or what direction I wanted to take. And one day my friend Patty asked me if I ever thought about going back to school. And it never really had occurred to me that it was something that was a viable option for me. But something clicked, and I found myself in orientation testing at PCC Cascade. And I wound up in a math class and a writing class, both pre-college classes. And I went to those classes and I actually enjoyed them, which was completely foreign to me. I really enjoyed the whole experience, and I soon found student government. And I was the director of community service for the student government at Cascade. And the next year I was the ASPCC president. I'm still staggering at how I managed to find myself there. This is my second year as the ASPCC president. They said it'd be easier to talk in front of people over time, but I think whoever told me that was lying, because I'm still nervous every time I have to get up in front of a group of people, so excuse that. But I sit on the Oregon Community College Student Association, the Oregon Community College Student Association Board, I'm sorry, and I was elected the board representative. Can you imagine? Like I said, it hasn't gotten any easier, but maybe, who knows, in a couple of years. Since I got involved in student government and school, I've volunteered for various organizations. I worked for the Rebuilding Center, which recycles used building materials and recirculates those things back into the community. I've worked at the Outside Inn, which is a homeless youth shelter. And through all of my experiences since I got back into school, I've maintained a 4.0 GPA. And I can honestly tell you, and this chokes me up, that my experience at PCC has allowed me to have plans for my future that I never would have had. And what makes me nervous is that if the tuition increases we're seeing now had occurred just a few years ago, I probably wouldn't have come back to school, and that scares me. I'm sorry. I think about other people who aren't able to make it back, and I think about the friends I've made and the opportunities I've been fortunate enough to take advantage of. and I think it's a shame that the people you won't be hearing from today are those people that couldn't find a way to make it work. And that could have been me. This is embarrassing. I feel really lucky to be here today. And if there's anything that I could ask of you, is that you not forget those people who aren't here. And do what you can. And I know the situation's dismal, and I don't envy your situation, but just do what you can. And I'll leave you with that.
Thank you, and I appreciate the very strong message that you bring to us.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, a very eloquent statement and a most remarkable leader. Thank you. Thank you.
Good morning, morning. Honorable Chairman and committee members. Ryan has me choked up now. thank you for the opportunity for listening to us. I'm a laid off Freightliner worker. I was laid off in March of 2001.
Excuse me, ma'am. I need you to identify.
I'm sorry. My name is Veronica Arabon. Thank you. And I attend Portland Community College, Cascade Campus. I'm a former Freightliner worker. I was laid off year 2001. And I've never been so afraid in my life. I'm afraid I have children in Portland Public Schools. It just seems like the domino effect just keeps falling. There's no funding for this. There's no funding for that. And it's just been such a crisis for my family, because not only did I work for Freightliner, my husband worked for Freightliner also, so we were both laid off at the same time. And it's like, my God, what are we going to do? We have a mortgage. We have children. Portland Community College has been a lifesaver for me, because through the NAFTA program, I was able to go back to school. And while I was working at Freightliner, I really did. I prayed. I'm like, Lord, I have to get out of this, because I had a really less physically challenging job for 7 years. And then at the beginning of the layoffs, we were transferred to different areas. And I was drilling trucks. I'm lifting hoods. I mean, the job was very physically demanding. The men were broke down having surgeries, so it was even harder for the women. I prayed to get out of that job, and thank God. Unfortunately, but fortunately, I was laid off, and I got the opportunity to go back to school. I'd gone to school to University of Illinois in Chicago for 3 years before I moved to Portland. And like Brian, I don't think I took it as seriously as my parents told me to take it. I would have never been so happy to be back in school in my life. The first year I was there, I had 19 credit hours, and I had a 4.0 GPA, straight A's. It was just amazing. I loved learning, and just, you could fill this room with so many voices from the other students that I see that are in the same situation as I am. They are thanking God that they are able to go back to school, because we don't know what else we would do or where we would be if it were not for the opportunity to return to school. I am an older student. I'm like, okay, where will I be in the workforce? You know, I have various training, but I have to keep a roof over my children's head. I am now setting an example for other members of my community, teaching them the importance of education, talking to them when they never thought they would have the opportunity to go back to school. So I thank God for their community campus. I live down the street. We're homeowners. We're taxpayers. And between the school situation with our children, with the funding, with ourselves, I'm like, when is it going to stop? I saw a bumper sticker the other day, and I never mind bumper stickers, but this one will stay with me for the rest of my life. It said, if you think education is expensive, try ignorance. And that is just so true. So we're here to basically plead and thank you for doing whatever you can to keep us all in school. I'm in the ophthalmic technology program, and this is the only program west of the Mississippi. And I believe like 70%, almost 80% of the second-year students are already lined up for employment. So there's like, I can see a paycheck in next year's time that I will be able to help my family and encourage my children and let them be allowed to do the things that they could do and contribute back to the economy of Oregon with a paycheck as opposed to an unemployment check. So thank you all very much for what you're doing. We appreciate your help.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to call Jay and Julia Polshiker. If I said that right.
Maybe they will. Oh,
we will quickly introduce our children and then let them go back into the hall where they are having much more fun than they were in here. Let's see. This is my daughter Kathleen, and this is my daughter Sarah. They're identical twins who turn 1 year old on Easter. And this is Joshua. Joshua, can you say hi? He's 3 years old and really mad that we made him miss preschool this morning.
Do you want to go back out and play again? You want to stay with Mommy? Okay, come sit in this chair here and stay with Mommy.
We'll let them go back out. It's really great. We got all the staff, the high-level staff from the college to come babysit.
We got lots of help here.
Is this a daily occurrence when you go to school?
Yeah, I wish. We'll kind of briefly address different things. My name is Julia Palshikar. I'm a full-time student at Clackamas Community College, and this is my husband, Jay Esch. He also is a full-time student at Clackamas Community College in the nursing program. I want to tell you a little bit about a typical morning at our house. Depending on the day, it starts at a different time, but it starts with waking children up, changing diapers, getting them in clothes, sometimes a bath, depending on how prolific our children have been during the night. It then involves getting Joshua to preschool almost every morning, taking the girls to the childcare that they go to before I have to make it to my morning math class. We then will have various opportunities to see each other for possibly 15 minutes during the day as we cross paths between classes. And then if we're lucky, we have some time between 11:30 and 12 at night to check in with each other and see how our days have gone. There are over 28,000 students at Clackamas Community College who were enrolled in 2001-2002 school year. Their days probably don't sound exactly like mine, but I'm sure that they're just as busy. And I know from talking to a variety of students and my role as the president of the Child Care Club at Clackamas Community College that they are just as stressful and crazy. Clackamas Community College for summer term will have an increase in their tuition from $47 a credit, which it is currently, to $55 per credit hour. I want to share with you what that means to our family. $250 a term is the increase simply in tuition, and that doesn't count fee increases or the books increases that we've been told to expect. That equals 3 weeks worth of groceries, 50 hours of babysitting, all of our books for a term, 6 months of car insurance, 15 visits to the doctor, a half a month of rent, an entire term of electricity, and 3 months of diapers. All of those things may seem a small thing when you simply consider $250, but when it translates into it, I really can't not feed my kids or myself for 3 weeks. 50 hours of babysitting would basically make it so that I couldn't go to classes for 3 out of the 10 weeks in a term. Without books, I would not be able to study effectively or maintain the grade point average that makes it so that my husband and I are both Phi Theta Kappa members. Car insurance is extremely important, not only for getting him to school and our children around, but so that Jay can go to his clinicals up at the neonatal intensive care unit up at Oregon Health Sciences University. With his babies who are born premature, we find that we make visits to the doctor. In fact, 15 visits is about what the number of doctor's visits we do in a single term. Half a month of rent would seem like a small thing, but we do have to have somewhere to sleep at night, and our children have to have somewhere to put their toys. Electricity may be somewhat, may not be absolutely necessary during the summer, but for students in college who have to write term papers, we don't do very well riding bicycles to create the electricity to keep our computer going. And diapers, while I sincerely wish we could get to the point where we didn't need them, we're not quite at that point yet. Some may tell us to simply work more. We are physically in classes for 50 hours a week between the two of us. We have at least that much homework time added on to that, which brings us to 100 hours. My husband works 24 hours a week for Meridian Park Hospital as a certified nursing assistant. And during that time, me getting homework done is not really an option. If you add 100 hours of sleeping time between us, which comes to about 6.5 hours a night, which is about where we're at on good nights, you then can get to the point where there are 86 hours a week that the two of us share as free time. Some of that time is spent going to church. Much of it is spent preparing and eating food and also driving our children and ourselves to our various activities. We have taken some of that time this week to come here and talk to you, to tell you how important an education is to us and to our children and their future. We don't have time to waste on superfluous things. I wish we did. My husband would love to spend more time playing around with computer programs, and I would love to read more science fiction novels because those are things that we truly love to do. But that is not an option for us at this time, and we gladly and willingly make that sacrifice to be able to have careers and become supporting members of the community who will eventually give back in taxes to support, hopefully, larger community college programs in the future. We ask you to put the same emphasis on our education and the education of all those community college students who are currently in college and who will come to those community colleges in the future. We ask you to put that emphasis there and back it up with the money to make sure that programs don't disappear and dreams don't disappear from those students as they go through the programs. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Sure. Well, I realize my time is short. I'll be brief. As you probably gleaned from, my name is Jayesh Palshikar. I'm a nursing student at Clackamas Community College. I'll be graduating in June and looking for a job at one of the hospitals in the area, so I was really pleased to hear the hospital administrators coming forward and advocating for the community college programs. The nursing programs are especially pertinent to Oregon at this juncture, as you've heard already, because of our current and ongoing nursing shortage, and with the average age of the working nurse at about 45 years, the shortage is going to get more acute. One of the big concerns about the increases in tuition is many of my classmates and myself would find it very difficult to continue with the nursing program with the increased tuition. And that's exactly what Oregon does not need. We need more nurses coming out of the programs. We need more nurses entering the workforce. So I wanted to just kind of plant that seed and encourage you to, if there's any way to restore some of the funding which has been slated to be cut. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you both. I think this entire committee is very concerned about the funding of community colleges as tuition for the university system and the cost of tuition increases. So we've got a lot of work to do.
Thank you.
thank you both for coming.
Thank you.
I've got a problem here. People that are signed up to testify keep leaving the room. But if anyone knows where Lori Wimmer Whalen is, she just walked out on me. And the next I'd like to call is Rick Levine. Here's Lori. You're up, Lori.
Good morning. I apologize. For the record, Lori Wimmer Whalen with the Oregon Education Association. We represent 44,000 K-12 and community college faculty and classified, and I'm pleased to be here before you this morning. And I'll paraphrase my written testimony. We at OEA are very concerned for the budget levels under consideration and believe that these numbers do not adequately support the 17 community college programs across the state. We would, however, like to thank and acknowledge the co-chairs for recognizing the role community colleges play in contributing to the revitalization of Oregon's economy, especially with respect to workforce retraining and retooling. While the $10 million bump for enrollment growth does reflect a nod to that value, the co-chair's recommended level is still more than $100 million lower than would be needed to fund full enrollment growth for the coming biennium. It is $23 million lower than the 2002 cut levels budget. Also, this budget, just as the governor's did, assumes no inflation, and it assumes all employees' salary and benefit levels will be frozen. And I'd like to refer you to the third page of my testimony, where you have a chart that we created that shows you the various different budget levels under discussion. You'll note that to the left of the line are what we would consider to be adequate funding, and to the right, one variation or another of cut levels. The impacts of these proposals are various and depending on the campus, but in all cases, they will be devastating. As you've heard from so many who've come before and spoken more eloquently than I, whether it's helping the young entrepreneurs develop the skills they need to succeed in business ownership or retraining displaced workers for new careers, community colleges help to revitalize the workforce, which fosters self-sufficiency and less reliance on human services programs. Community colleges also fill an important community need to supply highly trained employees in specific critical sectors. And community colleges are also, I might point out, often the largest or nearly the largest employers in many communities, especially small communities throughout Oregon. And their employees, both their economic activity directly through purchasing and hiring and indirectly through their employees' economic consumerism, impacts those communities. Likewise, cuts to those community colleges will disadvantage economically the communities in which they're located. You've heard before from many others what the impacts will be from these cut levels. Increases in tuition, which is code language for shutting the door of access for so very many Oregonians who are struggling to make their way out of poverty and unemployment. Canceling programs offering fewer classes in any particular course, truncating terms from 12 to 11 weeks, which has, by the way, already happened at some community colleges, staff reductions or furloughs, budgets for supplies and services further trimmed, community events canceled, the list goes on. And as you've also heard, the over-reliance on part-time faculty will worsen. And I have more to say about that in my written testimony, if you please pay attention to that, because that is a problem that OEA has brought to various legislatures' attentions over the years, and that it's being exacerbated by these cut levels as well. We believe this is not the future that you all would envision for Oregon's community colleges and the students they serve, and it need not be the future that comes to pass. There are many ideas, Senator Gordley's is one of them, of ways to increase the available supply of revenues for the coming biennium. Just last Friday, the Oregon Revenue Coalition, of which I'm chair, presented to the legislature its proposal to reduce or repeal tax expenditures to recover revenue sufficient to close the gap in the shortfall that we are facing down for the next biennium. Each of you should have received a copy of our report with respect to that proposal. My parents always used to utter the cliche to me when they were encouraging me to do things I thought I couldn't do. Where there's a will, there's a way. The question I would propose to you today, as you consider this and other important budgets, is what will it take to summon the will to find the way? Thank you.
Thank you, Lori. Doctor?
Chairperson Meserly, members of the committee, my name is Richard Levine, and I'm the president at Rogue Community College. I believe I'm the last speaker, and I've been asked to wrap up for the community colleges the presentation today. I'd like to start off by saying that you have heard from our faculty, you've heard from members of our boards, my colleagues, members of the business community, and most importantly, you've heard from our students. If anyone could speak for community colleges, it's certainly the group of students that you've heard today who come from a wide variety of backgrounds, economic statuses, and are very successful in what they do at the community college level. We have 400,000 students in the state of Oregon, 400,000 people who, for the most part, are earning a living while they're going to school, who pay taxes, who, maybe most importantly for some of the members of the committee, are voters. They're a very significant impact to the entire state of Oregon. They're also a significant impact, as you've heard, to a majority of the businesses in this state. Some of those businesses, in fact, have been started because there was a community college delivering a small business development center. The speaker just before me mentioned something that I was going to conclude with, and I really would like to do that as well. As I mentioned in my testimony last Thursday, I've been in front of committees like this for almost 30 years. And I do know how budgets get put together at the state. And at a time when budgets are being cut 4, 8, 10, in our case it was almost 13%, if you start to project out how you build back budgets in future bienniums, we're talking about a decade before we will see budgets that we had passed through this legislature or the previous legislature in the last biennium. That will create a huge impact in the infrastructure of the state of Oregon. It will not attract new businesses because that infrastructure will have been shattered. It will cause our students to attend other colleges and universities rather than stay in the state of Oregon, which means, for the most part, they won't stay and work in Oregon. I believe you need to look at more than just a biennial fix. I think this is an issue that needs a long-term approach. I know, Senator Gordley, you've introduced legislation for Representative Bates was here. He, along with Senator Hannon, have also are thinking about introducing legislation to correct some of the issues and help us in our future. Last Thursday, the Medford-Jackson County Chamber had a conference call with all of our Southern Oregon legislators. At that conference call, there were 50 people representing the business community, included people from Lithia Corporation, Asante, Providence Hospital, Gold River Distributing. All would be affected by tax increases for businesses, increases in any type of value-added tax. And all of them, to a person, told that legislative contingent that they believe the state of Oregon needed to do something for the future of the state. They're all very deeply concerned, not just because of community colleges. I do need to thank you and the co-chairs for adding $10 million to our budget. However, whenever there's an increase in one budget, there's a decrease in other budgets. This state, I believe, is on the brink of a catastrophe, whether it's with our educational system or our health system or our social service system. It behooves this legislature to try to come up with a long-term solution. Community colleges can help. We can help at a local level. We can help at a statewide level. We've done it in the past. We've done it for over 30 years, and we can do it again for you. And we would like to partner with you in figuring out, you know, ways to make a difference over the next few years and not just for the next biennium. So I'd like to close again with just thanking you for your patience, listening to us, hearing our stories, supporting us, and hopefully we can work with you to see a way out of the predicament that we're in and provide a way for the future for all of the students that you see here, plus all the students that will be coming to community colleges. So thank you.
Thank you. And I want to thank everyone who's testified today for being very focused in your remarks and right to the point. I'm always amazed when I chair these public hearings that it always seems to work out. As you can see, we've got 5 minutes to spare today, but we've had three people cancel, so that always helps. But I do appreciate your working with me to get everyone, allowing everyone to have the opportunity to testify. So with that, we'll close the public hearing and adjourn the committee meeting.